But the band of Sordo are as much better than we are as we are better than goat manure.
All is well, then.
Yes, Augustine said. But I wish it was for today.
Me too, to finish with it. But it is not.
Do you think it will be bad?
It can be.
But thou art very cheerful now, Inglés.
Yes.
Me also, in spite of this of the Maria and all.
Do you know why?
No.
Me neither. Perhaps it is the day. The day is good.
Who knows? Perhaps it is that we will have action.
I think it is that, Robert Jordan said. But not today. Of all things, of all importance, we must avoid it today. As he spoke, he heard something. It was a noise far off that came above the sound of the warm wind in the trees. He could not be sure, and he held his mouth open and listened, glancing up at Primitivo as he did so. He thought he heard it, but then it was gone. The wind was blowing in the pines, and now Robert Jordan strained all of himself to listen. Then he heard it faintly coming down the wind.
"It is nothing tragic with me," he heard Augustine say. "That I should never have the Maria is nothing. I will go with the whores, as always."
"Shut up," he said, not listening, and lying beside him, his head having been turned away. Augustine looked over at him suddenly.
"¿Qué pasa?"
he asked. Robert Jordan put his hand over his own mouth and went on listening. There it came again. It came faint, muted, dry, and far away. But there was no mistaking it now. It was the precise, crackling, curling roll of automatic rifle fire. It sounded as though pack after pack of miniature firecrackers were going off at a distance that was almost out of hearing. Robert Jordan looked up at Primitivo, who had his head up now, his face looking toward them, his hand cupped to his ear. As he looked, Primitivo pointed up the mountain toward the highest country.
"They are fighting at El Sordos," Robert Jordan said.
"Then let us go to aid them," Augustine said. "Collect the people. Vámonos."
"No," Robert Jordan said. "We stay here." Chapter 25. Robert Jordan looked up at where Primitivo stood now in his lookout post, holding his rifle and pointing. He nodded his head, but the man kept pointing, putting his hand to his ear and then pointing insistently and as though he could not possibly have been understood.
"Do you stay with this gun, and unless it is sure, sure, sure that they are coming in, do not fire. And then, not until they reach that shrub," Robert Jordan pointed. "Do you understand?"
"Yes, but..."
"No but. I will explain to thee later. I go to Primitivo."
Anselmo was by him, and he said to the old man,
"Viejo, stay there with Augustine with the gun."
He spoke slowly and unhurriedly. "He must not fire unless cavalry is actually entering. If they merely present themselves, he must let them alone as we did before. If he must fire, hold the legs of the tripod firm for him, and hand him the pans when they are empty."
"Good," the old man said. "And La Granja?"
"Later." Robert Jordan climbed up, over and around the gray boulders that were wet now under his hands as he pulled himself up. The sun was melting the snow on them fast. The tops of the boulders were drying, and as he climbed he looked across the country and saw the pine woods and the long open glade and the dip of the country before the high mountains beyond. Then he stood beside Primitivo in a hollow behind two boulders, and the short, brown-faced man said to him,
"They are attacking Sordo. What is it that we do?"
"Nothing," Robert Jordan said. He heard the firing clearly here, and as he looked across the country, he saw far off, across the distant valley where the country rose steeply again, a troop of cavalry ride out of the timber and cross the snowy slope, riding uphill in the direction of the firing. He saw the oblong double line of men and horses dark against the snow as they forced at an angle up the hill. He watched the double line top the ridge and go into the farther timber.
"We have to aid them," Primitivo said. His voice was dry and flat.
"It is impossible," Robert Jordan told him. "I have expected this all morning."
"How?"
"They went to steal horses last night. The snow stopped, and they tracked them up there."
"But we have to aid them," Primitivo said. "We cannot leave them alone to this. Those are our comrades."
Robert Jordan put his hand on the other man's shoulder. "We can do nothing," he said. "If we could, I would do it."
"There is a way to reach there from above. We can take that way with the horses and the two guns, this one below and thine. We can aid them thus.
Listen, Robert Jordan said.
That is what I listen to, Primitivo said.
The firing was rolling in overlapping waves. Then they heard the noise of hand grenades, heavy and sodden, in the dry rolling of the automatic rifle fire. They are lost, Robert Jordan said. They were lost when the snow stopped. If we go there, we are lost too. It is impossible to divide what force we have. There was a gray stubble of beard stippled over Primitivo's jaws, his lip, and his neck. The rest of his face was flat brown, with a broken, flattened nose and deep-set gray eyes, and watching him, Robert Jordan saw the stubble twitching at the corners of his mouth and over the cord of his throat.
"Listen to it," he said. "It is a massacre."
"If they have surrounded the hollow, it is that," Robert Jordan said. "Some may have gotten out."
"Coming on them now, we could take them from behind," Primitivo said. "Let four of us go with the horses."
"And then what? What happens after you take them from behind?"
"We join with Sordo."
"To die there? Look at the sun. The day is long." The sky was high and cloudless, and the sun was hot on their backs. There were big, bare patches now on the southern slope of the open glade below them, and the snow was all dropped from the pine trees. The boulders below them that had been wet as the snow melted were steaming faintly now in the hot sun.
"You have to stand it," Robert Jordan said. "Hay que aguantarse.
There are things like this in a war."
"But there is nothing we can do? Truly?"
Primitivo looked at him, and Robert Jordan knew he trusted him.
"Thou couldst not send me and another with the small machine gun?"
"It would be useless," Robert Jordan said. He thought he saw something that he was looking for, but it was a hawk that slid down into the wind and then rose above the line of the farthest pine woods.
"It would be useless if we all went," he said.
Just then the firing doubled in intensity, and in it was the heavy bumping of the hand grenades.
"Oh, obscenity, them,"
Primitivo said with an absolute devoutness of blasphemy, tears in his eyes and his cheeks twitching.
"Oh, God and the Virgin, obscenity them in the milk of their filth."
"Calm thyself," Robert Jordan said. "You will be fighting them soon enough. Here comes the woman." Pilar was climbing up to them, making heavy going of it in the boulders. Primitivo kept saying,
"Obscenity them! Oh, God and the Virgin, befoul them!"
Each time, for firing rolled down the wind, and Robert Jordan climbed down to help Pilar up. "Get out, woman," he said, taking hold of both her wrists and hoisting as she climbed heavily over the last boulder.
"Thy binoculars,"
she said, and lifted their strap over her head.
"So it has come to Sordo?"
"Yes."
"Pobre,"
she said in commiseration.
"Poor Sordo."
She was breathing heavily from the climb, and she took hold of Robert Jordan's hand and gripped it tight in hers as she looked out over the country.
"How does the combat seem?"
"Bad, very bad."
"He's jodido?"
"I believe so."
"Pobre," she said. "Doubtless because of the horses?"
"Probably."
"Pobre," Pilar said.
Then,
"Rafael recounted me all of an entire novel of dung about cavalry. What came?"
"A patrol, and part of a squadron."
"Up to what point?"
Robert Jordan pointed out where the patrol had stopped and showed her where the gun was hidden. From where they stood, they could just see one of Augustine's boots protruding from the rear of the blind.
"The gypsy said they rode to where the gun muzzle pressed against the chest of the horse of the leader," Pilar said. "What a race.
Thy glasses were in the cave." "Have you packed?"
"All that can be taken. Is there news of Pablo?"
"He was 40 minutes ahead of the cavalry. They took his trail." Pilar grinned at him. She still held his hand. Now she dropped it.
"They'll never see him," she said. "Now for Sordo. Can we do anything?"
"Nothing."
"Pobre,"
she said.
"I was fond of Sordo." "Thou art sure, sure that he is jodido?"
"Yes. I have seen much cavalry."
"More than were here?"
"Another full troop on their way up there."
"Listen to it," Pilar said. "Pobre, pobre Sordo."
They listened to the firing. "Primitivo wanted to go up there," Robert Jordan said.
"Art thou crazy?" Pilar said to the flat-faced man. "What kind of locos are we producing here?"
"I wish to aid them."
Que va, Pilar said. Another romantic. Dost thou not believe thou wilt die quick enough here without useless voyages?
Robert Jordan looked at her, at the heavy brown face with the high Indian cheekbones, the wide-set dark eyes, and the laughing mouth with the heavy, bitter upper lip.
Thou must act like a man, she said to Primitivo. A grown man. You with your gray hairs and all.
Don't joke at me, Primitivo said sullenly. If a man has a little heart and a little imagination,
he should learn to control them, Pilar said. Thou wilt die soon enough with us. There is no need to seek that with strangers. As for thy imagination, the gypsy has enough for all. What a novel, he told me.
If thou had seen it, thou wouldst not call it a novel, Primitivo said. There was a moment of great gravity.
Que va, Pilar said. Some cavalry rode here and they rode away, and you all make yourselves a heroism. It is to this we have come with so much inaction.
And this absurdo is not grave? Primitivo said, contemptuously now. He suffered visibly each time the firing came down the wind, and he wanted either to go to the combat or have Pilar go and leave him alone.
Total, que? Pilar said. It has come, so it has come. Don't lose thy cojones for the misfortune of another.
Go defile thyself, Primitivo said. There are women of a stupidity and brutality that is insupportable.
In order to support and aid those men poorly equipped for procreation, Pilar said, if there is nothing to see, I am going.
Just then Robert Jordan heard the plane high overhead. He looked up, and in the high sky it looked to be the same observation plane that he had seen earlier in the morning. Now it was returning from the direction of the lines, and it was moving in the direction of the high country, where El Sordo was being attacked.
There is the bad luck bird, Pilar said. Will it see what goes on there?
Surely, Robert Jordan said, if they are not blind. They watched the plane moving high and silvery and steady in the sunlight. It was coming from the left, and they could see the round disks of light the two propellers made.
Keep down, Robert Jordan said.
Then the plane was overhead, its shadows passing over the open glade, the throbbing reaching its maximum of portent. Then it was past and headed toward the top of the valley. They watched it go steadily on its course until it was just out of sight, and then they saw it coming back in a wide dipping circle to circle twice over the high country and then disappear in the direction of Segovia. Robert Jordan looked at Pilar. There was perspiration on her forehead, and she shook her head. She had been holding her lower lip between her teeth.
For each one there is something, she said. For me it is those.
Thou hast not caught my fear? Primitivo said sarcastically.
Nay, she put her hand on his shoulder. Thou hast no fear to catch. I know that. I am sorry I joked too roughly with thee. We are all in the same cauldron.
Then she spoke to Robert Jordan.
I will send up food and wine. Dost need anything more?
Not in this moment. Where are the others?
Thy reserve is intact below with the horses, she grinned. Everything is out of sight. Everything to go is ready. Maria is with thy material.
If by any chance we should have aviation, keep her in the cave.
Yes, my lord Inglés, Pilar said. Thy gypsy, I give him to thee, I have sent to gather mushrooms to cook with the hares. There are many mushrooms now, and it seemed to me we might as well eat the hares, although they would be better tomorrow or the day after.
I think it is best to eat them, Robert Jordan said. And Pilar put her big hand on his shoulder where the strap of the submachine gun crossed his chest, then reached up and mussed his hair with her fingers.
What an Inglés, Pilar said. I will send Maria with the buchero when they are cooked.
The firing from far away and above had almost died out, and now there was only an occasional shot.
You think it is over? Pilar asked.
No, Robert Jordan said. From the sound that we have heard, they have attacked and been beaten off. Now I would say the attackers have them surrounded. They have taken cover and they wait for the planes. Pilar spoke to Primitivo.
Thou, dost understand there was no intent to insult thee?
Ya lo sé, said Primitivo. I have put up with worse than that from thee. Thou hast a vile tongue. But watch thy mouth, woman. Sordo was a good comrade of mine.
And not of mine? Pilar asked him. Listen, Flatface.
In war one cannot say what one feels. We have enough of our own without taking sordos. Primitivo was still sullen.
You should take a physic,
Pilar told him. Now I go to prepare the meal. Did you bring the documentation of the requete? Robert Jordan asked her.
How stupid I am, she said. I forgot it. I will send them, Maria.
Chapter 26. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon before the planes came. The snow had all been gone by noon, and the rocks were hot now in the sun. There were no clouds in the sky, and Robert Jordan sat in the rocks with his shirt off, browning his back in the sun, and reading the letters that had been in the pockets of the dead cavalrymen. From time to time he would stop reading to look across the open slope to the line of timber, look over the high country above, and then return to the letters. No more cavalry had appeared. At intervals there would be the sound of a shot from the direction of El Sordo's camp. But the firing was desultory. From examining his military papers, he knew the boy was from Tafalla, in Navarra, 21 years old, unmarried, and the son of a blacksmith. His regiment was the 10th Cavalry, which surprised Robert Jordan, for he had believed that regiment to be in the north. He was a Carlist, and he had been wounded at the fighting for Irun at the start of the war.
I've probably seen him run through the streets ahead of the bulls at the Feria in Pamplona, Robert Jordan thought. You never kill anyone that you want to kill in a war, he said to himself. Well, hardly ever, he amended, and went on reading the letters.
The first letters he read were very formal, very carefully written, and dealt almost entirely with local happenings. They were from his sister, and Robert Jordan learned that everything was all right in Tafalla, that father was well, that mother was the same as always, but with certain complaints about her back, that she hoped he was well, and not in too great danger, and she was happy he was doing away with the Reds to liberate Spain from the domination of the Marxist hordes. Then there was a list of those boys from Tafalla who had been killed or badly wounded since she wrote last. She mentioned 10 who were killed. That is a great many for a town the size of Tafalla, Robert Jordan thought. There was quite a lot of religion in the letter, and she prayed to St. Anthony, to the Blessed Virgin of Pilar, and to other virgins to protect him, and she wanted him never to forget that he was also protected by the Sacred Heart of Jesus that he wore still, she trusted, at all times over his own heart, where it had been proven innumerable, this was underlined, times to have the power of stopping bullets. She was, as always, his loving sister Concha. This letter was a little stained around the edges, and Robert Jordan put it carefully back with the military papers, and opened a letter with a less severe handwriting. It was from the boy's novia, his fiancée, and it was quietly, formally, and completely hysterical with concern for his safety. Robert Jordan read it through, and then put all the letters together with the papers into his hip pocket. He did not want to read the other letters.
I guess I've done my good deed for today, he said to himself. I guess you have, all right, he repeated.
What are those you are reading? Primitivo asked him.
The documentation and the letters of that requete we shot this morning. Do you want to see it?
I can't read, Primitivo said. Was there anything interesting?
No, Robert Jordan told him. They are personal letters.
How are things going where he came from? Can you tell from the letters?
They seem to be going all right, Robert Jordan said. There are many losses in his town. He looked down to where the blind for the automatic rifle had been changed a little and improved after the snow melted. It looked convincing enough. He looked off across the country.
From what town is he? Primitivo asked.
Tafalla, Robert Jordan told him.
All right, he said to himself. I'm sorry, if that does any good.
It doesn't, he said to himself.
All right then, drop it, he said to himself.
All right, it's dropped. But it would not drop that easily. How many is that you have killed? He asked himself.
I don't know.
Do you think you have a right to kill anyone?
No, but I have to.
How many of those you have killed have been real fascists?
Very few.
But they are all the enemy to whose force we are opposing force.
But you like the people of Navarra better than those of any other part of Spain?
Yes.
And you kill them?
Yes.
If you don't believe it, go down there to the camp.
Don't you know it is wrong to kill?
Yes.
But you do it?
Yes.
And you still believe absolutely that your cause is right?
Yes.
It is right, he told himself, not reassuringly, but proudly. I believe in the people, and their right to govern themselves as they wish. But you mustn't believe in killing, he told himself. You must do it as a necessity, but you must not believe in it. If you believe in it, the whole thing is wrong. But how many do you suppose you have killed? I don't know, because I won't keep track. But do you know? Yes. How many? You can't be sure how many. Blowing the trains, you kill many. Very many. But you can't be sure. But of those you are sure of? More than 20. And of those, how many were real fascists? 2 that I'm sure of, because I had to shoot them when we took them prisoners at Usera. And you did not mind that? No. Nor did you like it? No. I decided never to do it again. I have avoided it. I have avoided killing those who are unarmed. Listen, he told himself. You better cut this out. This is very bad for you and for your work. Then himself said back to him, You listen, see? Because you are doing something very serious, and I have to see you understand it all the time. I have to keep you straight in your head. Because if you are not absolutely straight in your head, you have no right to do the things you do, for all of them are crimes, and no man has a right to take another man's life unless it is to prevent something worse happening to other people. So get it straight, and do not lie to yourself. But I won't keep account of people I have killed as though it were a trophy record, or a disgusting business like notches in a gun, he told himself. I have a right to not keep count, and I have a right to forget them. No, himself said. You have no right to forget anything. You have no right to shut your eyes to any of it, nor any right to forget any of it, nor to soften it, nor to change it. Shut up, he told himself. You're getting awfully pompous. Nor ever to deceive yourself about it, himself went on. All right, he told himself. Thanks for all the good advice. And is it all right for me to love Maria? Yes, himself said. Even if there isn't supposed to be any such thing as love in a purely materialistic conception of society? Since when did you ever have any such conception? Himself asked. Never. And you never could have. You're not a real Marxist, and you know it. You believe in liberty, equality, and fraternity. You believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Don't ever kid yourself with too much dialectics. They are for some, but not for you. You have to know them in order not to be a sucker. You have put many things in abeyance to win a war. If this war is lost, all of those things are lost. But afterwards you can discard what you do not believe in. There is plenty you do not believe in, and plenty that you do believe in. And another thing. Don't ever kid yourself about loving someone. It is just that most people are not lucky enough ever to have it. You never had it before, and now you have it. What you have with Maria, whether it lasts just through today and a part of tomorrow, or whether it lasts for a long life, is the most important thing that can happen to a human being. There will always be people who say it does not exist because they cannot have it. But I tell you it is true, and that you have it, and that you are lucky even if you die tomorrow. Cut out the dying stuff, he said to himself. That's not the way we talk. That's the way our friends, the anarchists, talk. Whenever things get really bad, they want to set fire to something and to die. It's a very odd kind of mind they have. Very odd. Well, we're getting through today, old-timer, he told himself. It's nearly 3 o'clock now, and there's going to be some food sooner or later. They are still shooting up at Sordos, which means that they have him surrounded and are waiting to bring up more people, probably, though they have to make it before dark. I wonder what it is like up at Sordos. That's what we all have to expect, given enough time. I imagine it is not too jovial up at Sordos. We certainly got Sordo into a fine jam with that horse business. How does it go in Spanish? Un callejón sin salida. A passageway with no exit. I suppose I could go through with it all right. You only have to do it once, and it is soon over with. But wouldn't it be luxury to fight in a war sometime where, when you were surrounded, you could surrender? Estamos copados. We are surrounded. That was the great panic cry of this war. Then the next thing was that you were shot, with nothing bad before, if you were lucky. Sordo wouldn't be lucky that way. Neither would they, when the time ever came. It was 3 o'clock. Then he heard the far-off, distant throbbing, and looking up, he saw the planes. Chapter 27 El Sordo was making his fight on a hilltop. He did not like this hill, and when he saw it, he thought it had the shape of a canker. But he had had no choice except this hill, and he had picked it as far away as he could see it and galloped for it, the automatic rifle heavy on his back, the horse laboring, barrel heaving between his thighs, the sack of grenades swinging against one side, the sack of automatic rifle pans banging against the other, and Joaquin and Ignacio halting and firing to give him some time to get the gun in place. There had still been snow then, the snow that had ruined them, and when his horse was hit so that he wheezed in a slow, jerking, climbing stagger up the last part of the crest, splattering the snow with a bright, pulsing jet, Sordo had hauled him along by the bridle, the reins over his shoulder as he climbed. He climbed as hard as he could with the bullets spatting on the rocks, with the two sacks heavy on his shoulders, and then holding the horse by the mane, had shot him quickly, expertly, and tenderly, just where he had needed him, so that the horse pitched, head forward, down to plug a gap between two rocks. He had gotten the gun to firing over the horse's back, and he fired two pans, the gun clattering, the empty shells pitching into the snow, the smell of burnt hair from the burnt hide where the hot muzzle rested, him firing at what came up to the hill, forcing them to scatter for cover, while all the time there was a chill in his back from not knowing what was behind him. Once the last of the five men had reached the hilltop, the chill went out of his back, and he had saved the pans he had left until he would need them. There were two more horses dead along the slope, and three more were dead here on the hilltop. He had only succeeded in stealing three horses last night, and one had bolted when they tried to mount him bareback in the corral at the camp when the first shooting had started. Of the five men who had reached the hilltop, three were wounded. Sordo was wounded in the calf of his leg and in two places in his left arm. He was very thirsty, his wounds had stiffened, and one of the wounds in his left arm was very painful. He also had a bad headache, and as he lay waiting for the planes to come, he thought of a joke in Spanish. It was, "Hay que tomar la muerte como si fuera aspirina," which means, "You will have to take death as an aspirin." But he did not make the joke aloud. He grinned somewhere inside the pain in his head, and inside the nausea that came whenever he moved his arm, and looked around at what there was left of his band. The five men were spread out like the points of a five-pointed star. They had dug with their knees and hands and made mounds in front of their heads and shoulders with the dirt and piles of stones. Using this cover, they were linking the individual mounds up with stones and dirt. Joaquin, who was 18 years old, had a steel helmet that he dug with, and he passed dirt in it. He had gotten this helmet at the blowing up of the train. It had a bullet hole through it, and everyone had always joked at him for keeping it. But he had hammered the jagged edges of the bullet hole smooth, and driven a wooden plug into it, and then cut the plug off, and smoothed it even with the metal inside the helmet. When the shooting started, he had clapped this helmet on his head so hard it banged his head, as though he had been hit with a casserole, and in the last lung-aching, leg-dead, mouth-dry, bullet-spatting, bullet-cracking, bullet-singing run up the final slope of the hill after his horse was killed, the helmet had seemed to weigh a great amount and to ring his bursting forehead with an iron band. But he had kept it. Now he dug with it in a steady, almost machine-like desperation. He had not yet been hit.
"It serves for something, finally," Sordo said to him in his deep, throaty voice.
"Resistir y fortificar es vencer," Joaquin said,
his mouth stiff with the dryness of fear which surpassed the normal thirst of battle. It was one of the slogans of the Communist Party, and it meant, "Hold out and fortify, and you will win." Sordo looked away and down the slope at where a cavalryman was sniping from behind a boulder. He was very fond of this boy, and he was in no mood for slogans.
"What did you say?"
One of the men turned from the building that he was doing. This man was lying flat on his face, reaching carefully up with his hands to put a rock in place, while keeping his chin flat against the ground. Joaquin repeated the slogan in his dried-up, boy's voice, without checking his digging for a moment.
"What was the last word?" the man with his chin on the ground asked.
"Vencer," the boy said. "Win."
"Mierda," the man with his chin on the ground said.
"There is another that applies to here," Joaquin said, bringing them out as though they were talismans.
"Pasionaria says it is better to die on your feet than to live on your knees."
Mierda again, the man said, and another man said over his shoulder, We're on our bellies, not our knees. Thou, communist, do you know your pasionaria has a son thy age in Russia since the start of the movement?
It's a lie, Joaquin said.
Que va, it's a lie, the other said. The dynamiter with the rare name told me. He was of thy party, too. Why should he lie?
It's a lie, Joaquin said. She would not do such a thing as keep a son hidden in Russia out of the war.
I wish I were in Russia, another of Sordo's men said. Will not thy pasionaria send me now from here to Russia, communist? If thou believest so much in thy pasionaria, get her to get us off this hill, one of the men who had a bandaged thigh said.
The fascists will do that, the man with his chin in the dirt said. Do not speak thus, Joaquin said to him.
Wipe the pap of your mother's breasts off thy lips and give me a hatful of that dirt, the man with his chin on the ground said. No one of us will see the sun go down this night. El Sordo was thinking, it is shaped like a canker, or the breast of a young girl with no nipple, or the top cone of a volcano. You have never seen a volcano, he thought. Nor will you ever see one, and this hill is like a canker. Let the volcanoes alone. It's late now for the volcanoes. He looked very carefully around the withers of the dead horse, and there was a quick hammering of firing from behind a boulder well down the slope, and he heard the bullets from the submachine gun thud into the horse. He crawled along behind the horse and looked out of the angle between the horse's hindquarters and the rock. There were three bodies on the slope just below him, where they had fallen when the fascists had rushed the crest under cover of the automatic rifle and submachine gun fire, and he and the others had broken down the attack by throwing and rolling down hand grenades. There were other bodies that he could not see on the other sides of the hill crest. There was no dead ground by which attackers could approach the summit, and Sordo knew that as long as his ammunition and grenades held out, and he had as many as four men, they could not get him out of there, unless they brought up a trench mortar. He did not know whether they had sent La Granja for a trench mortar. Perhaps they had not, because surely soon the planes would come. It had been 4 hours since the observation plane had flown over them. This hill is truly like a canker, Sordo thought, and we are the very pus of it. But we killed many when they made that stupidness. How could they think that they would take us thus? They have such modern armament that they lose all their sense with overconfidence. He had killed the young officer who had led the assault with a grenade that had gone bouncing and rolling down the slope as they came up it, running, bent half over. In the yellow flash and gray roar of smoke, he had seen the officer dive forward to where he lay now like a heavy, broken bundle of old clothing, marking the farthest point that the assault had reached. Sordo looked at this body, and then down the hill at the others. They are brave but stupid people, he thought. But they have sense enough now not to attack us again until the planes come. Unless, of course, they have a mortar coming. It would be easy with a mortar. The mortar was the normal thing, and he knew that they would die as soon as a mortar came up. But when he thought of the planes coming up, he felt as naked on that hilltop as though all of his clothing and even his skin had been removed. There is no nakeder thing than I feel, he thought. A flayed rabbit is as well covered as a bear in comparison. But why should they bring planes? They could get us out of here with a trench mortar easily. They are proud of their planes, though, and they will probably bring them, just as they were so proud of their automatic weapons that they made that stupidness. But undoubtedly they must have sent for a mortar, too. One of the men fired, then jerked the bolt and fired again quickly.
Save thy cartridges, Sordo said.
One of the sons of the Great Whore tried to reach that boulder, the man pointed.
Did you hit him? Sordo asked, turning his head with difficulty.
Nay, the man said. The fornicator ducked back.
Who is a whore of whores is Pilar, the man with his chin in the dirt said. That whore knows we are dying here.
She could do no good, Sordo said.
The man had spoken on the side of his good ear, and he had heard him without turning his head.
What could she do?
Take these sluts from the rear.
Gewa, Sordo said. They are spread around a hillside. How would she come on them? There are 150 of them, maybe more now.
But if we hold out until dark, Joaquin said.
And if Christmas comes on Easter,
the man with his chin on the ground said. And if thy aunt had cojones, she would be thy uncle, another said to him. Send for thy pasionaria. She alone can help us. I do not believe that about the son, Joaquin said. Or if he is there, he is training to be an aviator or something of that sort. He is hidden there for safety, the man told him. He is studying dialectics. Thy pasionaria has been there. So have Lister and Modesto and others. The one with the rare name told me. That they should go to study and return to aid us, Joaquin said. That they should aid us now, another man said. That all the cruts of Russian sucking swindlers should aid us now. He fired and said, Me cago en tal, I missed him again. Save thy cartridges and do not talk so much or thou wilt be very thirsty, Sordo said. There is no water on this hill. Take this, the man said, and rolling on his side he pulled a wineskin that he wore slung from his shoulder over his head and handed it to Sordo. Wash thy mouth out, old one. Thou must have much thirst with thy wounds. Let all take it, Sordo said. Then I will have some first, the owner said, and squirted a long stream into his mouth before he handed the leather bottle around. Sordo, when thinkest thou the planes will come? The man with his chin in the dirt asked. Any time, said Sordo. They should have come before. Do you think these sons of the great whore will attack again? Only if the planes do not come. He did not think there was any need to speak about the mortar. They would know it soon enough when the mortar came. God knows they've enough planes with what we saw yesterday. Too many, Sordo said. His head hurt very much, and his arm was stiffening so that the pain of moving it was almost unbearable. He looked up at the bright, high, blue early summer sky as he raised the leather wine bottle with his good arm. He was 52 years old, and he was sure this was the last time he would see that sky. He was not at all afraid of dying, but he was angry at being trapped on this hill which was only utilizable as a place to die. If we could have gotten clear, he thought, if we could have made them come up the long valley, or if we could have broken loose across the road, it would have been all right. But this canker of a hill, we must use it as well as we can, and we have used it very well so far. If he had known how many men in history have had to use a hill to die on, it would not have cheered him any. For in the moment he was passing through, men are not impressed by what has happened to other men in similar circumstances, any more than a widow of one day is helped by the knowledge that other loved husbands have died. Whether one has fear of it or not, one's death is difficult to accept. Sordo had accepted it, but there was no sweetness in its acceptance, even at 52, with three wounds and him surrounded on a hill. He joked about it to himself, but he looked at the sky and at the far mountains, and he swallowed the wine and he did not want it. If one must die, he thought, and clearly one must, I can die, but I hate it. Dying was nothing, and he had no picture of it, nor fear of it in his mind, but living was a field of grain blowing in the wind on the side of a hill. Living was a hawk in the sky. Living was an earthen jar of water in the dust of the threshing with the grain flailed out and the chaff blowing. Living was a horse between your legs and a carbine under one leg and a hill and a valley and a stream with trees along it and the far side of the valley and the hills beyond. Sordo passed the wine bottle back and nodded his head in thanks. He leaned forward and patted the dead horse on the shoulder where the muzzle of the automatic rifle had burned the hide. He could still smell the burnt hair. He thought how he had held the horse there, trembling, with the fire around them, whispering and cracking, over and around them like a curtain, and had carefully shot him just at the intersection of the cross lines between the two eyes and the ears. Then as the horse pitched down, he had dropped down behind his warm, wet back to get the gun to going as they came up the hill.
Eras mucho caballo, he said, meaning, thou wert plenty of horse.
El Sordo lay now on his good side and looked up at the sky. He was lying on a heap of empty cartridge hulls, but his head was protected by the rock, and his body lay in the lee of the horse. His wounds had stiffened badly, and he had much pain, and he felt too tired to move.
What passes with thee, old one? The man next to him asked. Nothing. I am taking a little rest. Sleep, the other said. They will wake us when they come.
Just then, someone shouted from down the slope.
Listen! Bandits!
The voice came from behind the rocks where the closest automatic rifle was placed.
Surrender now before the planes blow you to pieces!
What is it he says? Sordo asked.
Joaquin told him. Sordo rolled to one side and pulled himself up so that he was crouched behind the gun again.
Maybe the planes aren't coming, he said. Don't answer them, and do not fire. Maybe we can get them to attack again.
If we should insult them a little?
The man who had spoken to Joaquin about La Pasionaria's son in Russia asked.
No, Sordo said. Give me thy big pistol. Who has a big pistol?
Here.
Give it to me.
Crouched on his knees, he took the big 9mm star and fired one shot into the ground beside the dead horse, waited, then fired again 4 times at irregular intervals. Then he waited while he counted 60, and then fired a final shot directly into the body of the dead horse. He grinned and handed back the pistol.
Reload it, he whispered, and let everyone should keep his mouth shut and no one shoot.
Bandidos!
The voice shouted from behind the rocks. No one spoke on the hill.
Bandidos! Surrender now before we blow thee to little pieces!
They're biting, Sordo whispered happily.
As he watched, a man showed his head over the top of the rocks. There was no shot from the hilltop, and the head went down again. El Sordo waited, watching, but nothing more happened. He turned his head and looked at the others who were all watching down their sectors of the slope. As he looked at them, the others shook their heads.
Let no one move, he whispered.
Sons of the great whore,
the voice came now from behind the rocks again.
Red swine, mother rapers, eaters of the milk of thy fathers.
Sordo grinned. He could just hear the bellowed insults by turning his good ear. This is better than the aspirin, he thought. How many will we get? Can they be that foolish? The voice had stopped again, and for 3 minutes they heard nothing and saw no movement. Then the sniper behind the boulder 100 yards down the slope exposed himself and fired. The bullet hit a rock and ricocheted with a sharp whine. Then Sordo saw a man, bent double, run from the shelter of the rocks where the automatic rifle was across the open ground to the big boulder behind which the sniper was hidden. He almost dove behind the boulder. Sordo looked around. They signaled to him that there was no movement on the other slopes. El Sordo grinned happily and shook his head. This is 10 times better than the aspirin, he thought. And he waited, as happy as only a hunter can be happy. Below on the slope, the man who had run from the pile of stones to the shelter of the boulder was speaking to the sniper.
Do you believe it?
I don't know, the sniper said.
It would be logical,
the man who was the officer in command said.
They are surrounded. They have nothing to expect but to die.
The sniper said nothing.
What do you think?
The officer asked.
Nothing,
the sniper said.
Have you seen any movement since the shots?
Not at all. The officer looked at his wristwatch. It was 3:10.
The plane should have come an hour ago, he said.
Just then another officer flopped in behind the boulder. The sniper moved over to make room for him.
Thou, Paco,
the first officer said.
How does it seem to thee?
The second officer was breathing heavily from his sprint up and across the hillside from the automatic rifle position.
For me it is a trick, he said. But if it is not, what a ridicule we make waiting here and laying siege to dead men.
We have done something worse than ridiculous already, the second officer said. Look at that slope.
He looked up the slope to where the dead were scattered close to the top. From where he looked, the line of the hilltop showed the scattered rocks, the belly, projecting legs, shod hooves jutting out of Sordo's horse, and the fresh dirt thrown up by the digging.
What about the mortars?
Asked the second officer.
They should be here in an hour, if not before.
Then wait for them. There has been enough stupidity already.
Bandidos!
The first officer shouted suddenly, getting to his feet and putting his head well up above the boulder so that the crest of the hill looked much closer as he stood upright.
Red swine! Cowards!
The second officer looked at the sniper and shook his head. The sniper looked away, but his lips tightened. The first officer stood there, his head all clear of the rock and with his hand on his pistol butt. He cursed and vilified the hilltop. Nothing happened. Then he stepped clear of the boulder and stood there looking up the hill.
"Fire, cowards, if you are alive!"
he shouted.
"Fire on one who has no fear of any red that ever came out of the belly of the great whore!"
This last was quite a long sentence to shout, and the officer's face was red and congested as he finished. The second officer, who was a thin, sunburned man with quiet eyes, a thin, long-lipped mouth, and a stubble of beard over his hollow cheeks, shook his head again. It was this officer who was shouting who had ordered the first assault. The young lieutenant who was dead up the slope had been the best friend of this other lieutenant, who was named Paco Berendo, and who was listening to the shouting of the captain, who was obviously in a state of exaltation.
"Those are the swine who shot my sister and my mother," the captain said.
He had a red face and a blonde, British-looking mustache, and there was something wrong about his eyes. They were a light blue, and the lashes were light, too. As you looked at them, they seemed to focus slowly. Then,
"Reds!" he shouted. "Cowards!"
and commenced cursing again. He stood absolutely clear now, and sighting carefully, fired his pistol at the only target that the hilltop presented, the dead horse that had belonged to Sordo. The bullet threw up a puff of dirt 15 yards below the horse. The captain fired again. The bullet hit a rock and sung off. The captain stood there looking at the hilltop. The Lieutenant Berendo was looking at the body of the other lieutenant, just below the summit. The sniper was looking at the ground under his eyes. Then he looked up at the captain.
"There is no one alive up there," the captain said. "Thou," he said to the sniper, "go up there and see."
The sniper looked down. He said nothing.
"Don't you hear me?"
the captain shouted at him.
"Yes, my captain," the sniper said, not looking at him.
"Then get up and go."
The captain still had his pistol out. "Do you hear me?"
"Yes, my captain."
"Why don't you go then?"
"I don't want to, my captain."
"You don't want to?"
The captain pushed the pistol against the small of the man's back.
"You don't want to?"
"I am afraid, my captain," the soldier said with dignity.
Lieutenant Berendo, watching the captain's face and his odd eyes, thought he was going to shoot the man then.
"Captain Mora," he said.
"Lieutenant Berendo?"
"It is possible the soldier is right."
"That he is right to say he is afraid? That he is right to say he does not want to obey an order?"
"No, that he is right that it is a trick."
"They are all dead," the captain said. "Don't you hear me say they are all dead?"
"You mean our comrades on the slope?" Berendo asked him. "I agree with you."
"Paco," the captain said, "don't be a fool. Do you think you are the only one who cared for Julian? I tell you, the Reds are dead. Look."
He stood up, then put both hands on top of the boulder and pulled himself up, kneeing up awkwardly, then getting on his feet.
"Shoot!"
he shouted, standing on the gray granite boulder, and waved both his arms.
"Shoot me! Kill me!"
On the hilltop, El Sordo lay behind the dead horse and grinned. "What a people," he thought. He laughed, trying to hold it in because the shaking hurt his arm.
"Reds!"
came the shout from below.
"Red canaille! Shoot me! Kill me!"
Sordo, his chest shaking, barely peeped past the horse's crupper and saw the captain on top of the boulder waving his arms. Another officer stood by the boulder. The sniper was standing at the other side. Sordo kept his eye where it was and shook his head happily.
"Shoot me," he said softly to himself. "Kill me."
Then his shoulders shook again. The laughing hurt his arm, and each time he laughed his head felt as though it would burst. But the laughter shook him again like a spasm. Captain Mora got down from the boulder.
"Now do you believe me, Paco?"
he questioned Lieutenant Berendo. "No," said Lieutenant Berendo.
"Cajones,"
the captain said.
"Here there is nothing but idiots and cowards."
The sniper had gotten carefully behind the boulder again, and Lieutenant Berendo was squatting beside him. The captain, standing in the open beside the boulder, commenced to shout filth at the hilltop.
There is no language so filthy as Spanish. There are words for all the vile words in English, and there are other words and expressions that are used only in countries where blasphemy keeps pace with the austerity of religion. Lieutenant Berendo was a very devout Catholic, so was the sniper. They were Carlists from Navarra, and while both of them cursed and blasphemed when they were angry, they regarded it as a sin, which they regularly confessed. As they crouched now behind the boulder, watching the captain and listening to what he was shouting, they both disassociated themselves from him and what he was saying. They did not want to have that sort of talk on their consciences, on a day in which they might die. Talking thus will not bring luck, the sniper thought. Speaking thus of the Virgen is bad luck. This one speaks worse than the Reds. Julian is dead, Lieutenant Berendo was thinking. Dead there on the slope on such a day as this is, and this foul mouth stands there bringing more ill fortune with his blasphemies. Now the captain stopped shouting and turned to Lieutenant Berendo. His eyes looked stranger than ever.
Paco, he said happily, you and I will go up there.
Not me.
What?
The captain had his pistol out again. I hate these pistol brandishers, Berendo was thinking. They cannot give an order without jerking a gun out. They probably pull out their pistols when they go to the toilet and order the move they will make.
I will go if you order me to, but under protest, Lieutenant Berendo told the captain. Then I will go alone, the captain said. The smell of cowardice is too strong here.
Holding his pistol in his right hand, he strode steadily up the slope. Berendo and the sniper watched him. He was making no attempt to take any cover, and he was looking straight ahead of him at the rocks, the dead horse, and the fresh-dug dirt of the hilltop. El Sordo lay behind the horse at the corner of the rock, watching the captain come striding up the hill. Only one, he thought. We get only one. But from his manner of speaking, he is a cada mayor. Look at him walking. Look what an animal. Look at him stride forward. This one is for me. This one I take with me on the trip. This one coming now makes the same voyage I do. Come on, comrade voyager. Come striding. Come right along. Come along to meet it. Come on. Keep on walking. Don't slow up. Come right along. Come as thou art coming. Don't stop and look at those. That's right. Don't even look down. Keep on coming with your eyes forward. Look, he has a mustache. What do you think of that? He runs to a mustache, the comrade voyager. He is a captain. Look at his sleeves. I said he was a cada mayor. He has the face of an Inglés. Look, with a red face and blonde hair and blue eyes, with no cap on and his mustache is yellow. With blue eyes, with pale blue eyes. With pale blue eyes with something wrong with them. With pale blue eyes that don't focus. Close enough. Too close. Yes, comrade voyager. Take it, comrade voyager. He squeezed the trigger of the automatic rifle gently, and it pounded back three times against his shoulder with the slippery jolt the recoil of a tripoded automatic weapon gives. The captain lay on his face on the hillside. His left arm was under him. His right arm that had held the pistol was stretched forward of his head. From all down the slope they were firing on the hill crest again. Crouched behind the boulder, thinking that now he would have to sprint across that open space under fire, Lieutenant Berendo heard the deep, hoarse voice of Sordo from the hilltop.
Bandidos! The voice came. Bandidos! Shoot me! Kill me!
On the top of the hill, El Sordo lay behind the automatic rifle, laughing so that his chest ached, so that he thought the top of his head would burst.
Bandidos!
He shouted again happily.
Kill me, bandidos!
Then he shook his head happily. We have lots of company for the voyage, he thought. He was going to try for the other officer with the automatic rifle when he would leave the shelter of the boulder. Sooner or later he would have to leave it. Sordo knew that he could never command from there, and he thought he had a very good chance to get him. Just then the others on the hill heard the first sound of the coming of the planes. El Sordo did not hear them. He was covering the downslope edge of the boulder with his automatic rifle, and he was thinking, when I see him, he will be running already, and I will miss him if I am not careful.
I could shoot behind him all across that stretch. I should swing the gun with him and ahead of him, or let him start and then get on him and ahead of him. I will try to pick him up there at the edge of the rock and swing just ahead of him. Then he felt a touch on his shoulder, and he turned and saw the gray, fear-drained face of Joaquin, and he looked where the boy was pointing and saw the three planes coming. At this moment, Lieutenant Berendo broke from behind the boulder, and with his head bent and his legs plunging, ran down and across the slope to the shelter of the rocks where the automatic rifle was placed. Watching the planes, Sordo never saw him go.
"Help me to pull this out," he said to Joaquin,
and the boy dragged the automatic rifle clear from between the horse and the rock. The planes were coming on steadily. They were in echelon, and each second they grew larger, and their noise was greater.
"Lie on your backs to fire at them," Sordo said. "Fire ahead of them as they come."
He was watching them all the time.
"Cabrones, hijos de puta," he said rapidly. "Ignacio," he said, "put the gun on the shoulder of the boy. Thou," to Joaquin, "sit there and do not move. Crouch over. More, no, more."
He lay back and sighted with the automatic rifle as the planes came on steadily.
"Thou, Ignacio, hold me the three legs of that tripod."
They were dangling down the boy's back, and the muzzle of the gun was shaking from the jerking of his body that Joaquin could not control as he crouched with bent head, hearing the droning roar of their coming. Lying flat on his belly and looking up into the sky watching them come, Ignacio gathered the legs of the tripod into his two hands and steadied the gun.
"Keep thy head down," he said to Joaquin. "Keep thy head forward."
"Pasionaria says, better to die on thy—"
Joaquin was saying to himself as the drone came nearer them. Then he shifted suddenly into,
"Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. Holy Mary, Mother of God,"
he started. Then he remembered quickly, as the roar came now unbearably, and started an act of contrition, racing in it.
"O my God, I am heartily sorry for having offended thee who art worthy of all my love."
Then there were the hammering explosions past his ears, and the gun barrel hot against his shoulder. It was hammering now again, and his ears were deafened by the muzzle blast. Ignacio was pulling down hard on the tripod, and the barrel was burning his back. It was hammering now in the roar, and he could not remember the act of contrition. All he could remember was at the hour of our death, amen, at the hour of our death, amen, at the hour, amen. The others all were firing, now and at the hour of our death, amen. Then through the hammering of the gun there was the whistle of the air splitting apart, and then in the red-black roar the earth rolled under his knees and then waved up to hit him in the face, and then dirt and bits of rock were falling all over, and Ignacio was lying on him, and the gun was lying on him. But he was not dead, because the whistle came again, and the earth rolled under him with the roar. Then it came again, and the earth lurched under his belly, and one side of the hilltop rose into the air, and then fell slowly over them where they lay. The planes came back three times and bombed the hilltop, but no one on the hilltop knew it. Then the planes machine-gunned the hilltop and went away. As they dove on the hill for the last time with their machine guns hammering, the first plane pulled up and winged over, and then each plane did the same, and they moved from the echelon to V formation and went away into the sky in the direction of Segovia. Keeping a heavy fire on the hilltop, Lieutenant Berendo pushed a patrol up to one of the bomb craters from where they could throw grenades onto the crest. He was taking no chances of anyone being alive and waiting for them in the mess that was up there, and he threw four grenades into the confusion of dead horses, broken and split rocks, and torn, yellow-stained, explosive-stinking earth before he climbed out of the bomb crater and walked over to have a look. No one was alive on the hilltop except the boy Joaquin, who was unconscious under the dead body of Ignacio. Joaquin was bleeding from the nose and from the ears. He had known nothing and had no feeling since he had suddenly been in the very heart of the thunder, and the breath had been wrenched from his body when the one bomb struck so close, and Lieutenant Berendo made the sign of the cross and then shot him in the back of the head, as quickly and as gently, if such an abrupt movement can be gentle, as Sordo had shot the wounded horse. Lieutenant Berendo stood on the hilltop and looked down the slope at his own dead,
and then across the country, seeing where they had galloped before Sordo had turned at bay here. He noticed all the dispositions that had been made of the troops, and then he ordered the dead men